Hello, one and all, and welcome to the Oz Uncut Sports Podcast. That's enough of me using a stupid voice now. I'll just use my natural voice from here on end. I thought it'd be about time that I started, well, myself and the Oz Uncut crew, which is a team of one. I thought it was a good idea to start putting together some type of podcast, seeing as sports is something that I truly love. I thought doing a podcast would be a great idea, and discussing some sports points and having a little fun with it and that kind of thing. So this is the very first edition of the Oz Uncut Sports Podcast, and we're going to discuss four topics on the podcast today. We're going to talk some football, as we always do. Lots going on with the international games at the moment. And of course, we're heading into another weekend in Premier League, in Italian and European football. We're going to talk Formula One with the, what was the Grand Prix that just passed? Yes, the Brazilian Grand Prix, which was an interesting race. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about rugby union. Lots of games, interesting games just passed with the Autumn Internationals going on. And of course, a load of interesting games coming up as well, including a big one, England versus Australia. And then we're going to end off with a little cricket. So you people who don't like cricket can switch off towards the end. And for you who love your cricket, you can stay tuned. And we're going to talk about the Ashes, which gets underway in just over a week from now. So let's start by talking a little football, shall we? Yesterday, the big news, the big result was Italy going out of the qualifying of the World Cup. Italy will not be at Russia 2018. It was a goalless draw at the San Siro yesterday, which means that Sweden's 1-0 home victory just a few days before was enough to send them through to the World Cup. So, what can we say about Italy so far? Well, they're not the Italy of old, we know that for sure. If you go back 10, even 20 years ago, Italy were without a doubt a force to be reckoned with. That is certainly no longer the case. Hey, Italian fans, take it easy now. Don't send me no bad vibes. You've got to admit that it's true. They are no longer the force that they used to be. There's no doubt about it. Something is changed in Italian football overall from a national perspective. I think possibly it's time a little bit of evolution took place, which is why I don't see it as such a bad thing, Italy going out of the World Cup this time around. I think the sad part about all this is the retirement of some very, very, very big Italian players, some legends of the game. Gianluigi Buffon, goalkeeper extraordinaire. He's, spent a lot of his career playing for the Italian national side. I believe he's a World Cup winner and just a fabulous all-round guy. He went out in tears yesterday, you know, obviously apologizing to all of Italian football for the team not making it to the World Cup. He's not the only one who's retiring as well. There's a few of the other guys in the team who have decided to hang up their boots as well. Buffon's Juventus teammate, Andrea Barzagli, he's retiring from international football. Roma midfielder Daniele De Rossi has also ended his Italy career. And there are rumors of one or two others as well. Giorgio Chiellini probably going to be hanging up his boots as well from the international perspective. So that's a little bit sad because they were all of them, I think. You can look at all of them and say what great players they were for their clubs and countries. So bit of a shame. Buffon actually made 175 appearances for Italy starting at the age of 19. How incredible is that? I mean, how much of a legend do you have to be to play 175 times for your country? Absolutely amazing. All great players, they'll be missed. One person who won't be missed, I have a feeling, is Italy manager Giampiero Ventura, the former Torino manager who took over, what was it, a couple of years back now, pushing for the World Cup. He's failed. There's no other way to look at it, really, is it? He has failed. Simple as that. You cannot be the manager of Italy and not get to a big international tournament. That hasn't happened in nearly 60 years. So He's probably not feeling very good about himself, but I don't think he's the only one to blame. Let's be clear. He's a man who came with a good record at Torino, but of course he had very little international experience. No Champions League, I believe no Europa League football. You've got to be an international manager. You've got to have some kind of international experience. So while he's a great coach, I think he fell short in terms of being an international manager, and I think he shouldn't be the only one that takes the blame for this. I think the powers that be in the Italian Federation should also take some of the blame for, of course, appointing the wrong man in the first place. So that's real interesting. Italian fans, listen, don't take it too bad. I mean, 60 years, that's a pretty good run, if you ask me. As I said, I think you need a reboot. There's no doubt about that. I think it's time to out with the old, in with the new, start building again for the Euros in 2020, and then, of course, the World Cup beyond that as well, and start getting back some of those Italian values into the national game. I think that certainly would be extremely interesting. In terms of the overall quality of the playoffs so far, well, hell, they've been really bloody poor, haven't they? I mean, a lot of goalless draws, a lot of defensive attitudes. This kind of thing, I got to be honest with you, this kind of thing makes me extremely sick to see, you know? We see it in the Premier League all the time when a small club faces a big club. That whole Jose Mourinho, let's park the bus kind of attitude. It has dribbled into the international scene. Well, dribble, it's not like it hasn't been in there before, really, let's be honest. But it has shown itself more apparent in the international scene in the last couple of years, and there are reasons why, you can understand. There is so much at stake that it's just cowardice, isn't it? I mean, teams, managers, players, they're all afraid of losing. They're so afraid of losing that they're willing to sacrifice winning to get a draw and, of course, strategically perhaps progress to the next round. It doesn't happen so much in the group stages because you have to win your home games, of course. But when it comes to these kind of winner-takes-all sort of games, you can just see that there's too much fear in the game. There's so much at stake that they just don't want to play. They'd rather defend and try and get a result. And it's an area of football that, to be quite honestly, makes me want to puke violently because I want to see football at its rawest, you know, players out there playing football, trying to win games. It's a reason why, unfortunately, I don't watch the South American leagues, but I wish I could. Time-wise, it's not very convenient, but, you know, you've always, in the South American leagues, the Brazilian league, in the South American qualifying for the World Cup, you've always got two teams who go out hell for leather trying to win football matches, and that, for me, makes for a great spectacle. Not this drab, defending, 0-0, 1-0 kind of games where everything's really, really sort of, you know, podgy and slow and very, very tactical and, oh, it's just a snooze fest. Spare me, please. I don't want to see this stuff anymore. We've seen it in the Premier League as well, with usually small teams going up against the bigger teams because they think their only chance is to try and defend, and hopefully grab a draw. But we've also seen it with Jose Mourinho teams as well. His fear of losing, he doesn't like losing. He's a terrible loser. He doesn't like it at all. His fear of losing makes him play boring football at times. And you can see it all over the place nowadays. That's why I think viva the South American leagues and the South American style of football, because they just go for it. They want to win, and that is what they do. Hopefully, we'll see more of that in the future. I really hope to see a turnaround. I doubt it. If you look at the Premier League, too much at stake. Financially speaking, every place in the Premier League comes with big millions in difference, depending on what place you finish in the league. Of course, in terms of sponsorships and so forth. So you're going to still see small teams going to big teams and parking the bus, and probably Jose will do it as well. But I'd like to see that change. I wish it wasn't so because, as I said, it really bores me to tears. And it's just frustrating, you know? I would rather see my team lose 4-3 than draw 0-0 any day of the week. Sorry, some people may think differently, but I would rather see my team in an exciting game lose 4-3 trying to win the match than drawing 0-0 any day of the week. One more big game coming up, one more qualifying game, and then it's back to the Premier League, the Italian Serie A, the Spanish League, French League, German League, all back this coming weekend. So that should be interesting. I might even do another podcast towards the weekend with my thoughts on some of the games, but we'll see how that goes. I think I should maybe step into the podcast world, tread in rather slowly, seeing as this is my first official one. Okay, let's talk a little Formula One now. We just had the Brazilian Grand Prix this last race, or this last weekend, I should say. And it was, I guess you'd call a pretty interesting race. I mean, we can start off with the news that on Friday evening, some of the Mercedes crew that I believe work with Lewis Hamilton's car were held up at gunpoint leaving the circuit on Friday night. That's pretty freaking disgusting, isn't it? You don't want to see these things happening in sport. But of course, it is a bit of the argument, and it is a bit of the situation where you see these highly developed sporting events taking place in countries where there's a lot of problems going on. I mean, you may not see it in your face, especially for us Westerners, but in Brazil, there are a lot of people who live in a very poor state. There are slums all over the place. I remember when they had the Olympics, they actually built a wall that went on for miles that actually disguised all the slummy areas. You couldn't see through the wall. It would hide the scummy areas or the slummy areas of Brazil from people who are traveling from the airport towards the Olympic Village and where all the Olympic sports were taking place. There's big problems in Brazil, and of course this is what happens when you have these very rich, very glamorous sporting events coming to places like Brazil to have their races. That doesn't justify it, don't get me wrong, but it was clear that there wasn't enough security in place for that situation, and they did in fact up the security for the remainder of the race weekend. But thankfully, everybody was okay. One of the crew actually had a gun stuck to his head during the robbery. Thankfully, as I said, everybody is okay. I'm sure that did sort of affect the preparations for the weekend a little bit. But anyway, let's get to the race itself. Qualifying was interesting because Lewis Hamilton, who's usually a machine when it comes to qualifying, actually crashed on his first attempt and ended up at the back of the field. So he qualified at the very, very back of the field. Valtteri Bottas did end up taking pole position ahead of both of the Ferraris. So that was an interesting qualifying session because of the fact that Lewis crashed out more than anything else, let's be honest. Valtteri needed to get pole position because he's under pressure at Mercedes, of course, with Lewis already having won the title. And Valtteri, well, he hasn't really been that successful in a great car this year, let's be honest. He's got a couple of race wins, at least one, maybe two, I think. But he's fallen well short of the expectations that I think Mercedes have in terms of what they want out of their cars. But of course, I think personally, in terms of the driver relationship, it's worked a lot better because Lewis doesn't feel challenged in any way, shape, or form. It's quite clear that he is the number one driver at the moment and that Valtteri is clearly the number two driver at the moment. I think the relationship between Lewis and Nico Rosberg during their few years together at Mercedes was a very much an up and down one, and I'm not sure if it benefited the team overall. But I think, as you can see this year, Lewis and Valtteri seem to get on very, very well. There's no friction there, and I think their roles in the team are quite clear, and that's worked out well. But still, you've got to produce, and Valtteri did need to get that pole position, and he did get the pole position. But unfortunately, the race itself didn't turn out well. That great for Valtteri. I think a lot of people wanted him to go on and win the race. He didn't. He finished in second behind Sebastian Vettel, who annoys the hell out of me. Not because he's not a good driver. He is a good driver, but he's just very cocky. And that kind of annoys me. Not as cocky as Lewis, by the way, but quite cocky just the same. So Sebastian Vettel took the checkered flag. Valtteri Bottas came in second. Kimi Raikkonen came in third. But I think the driver of the day, without a doubt, starting from the pit lane after deciding to change his engine, seeing as he was finished at the back of the field, starting from the pit lane, Lewis Hamilton finished in fourth, just 1 second off a podium place. That is, it just shows what a fabulous driver he is. I mean, love him or hate him, and to be quite honest, I hate him because I can't stand the guy's interviews. He's such a sourpuss, it just gets under my skin. But love him or hate him, driver, oh, he's a driver. He's a great driver. And he had an amazing drive on Sunday in Brazil to finish fourth. The two Red Bulls, well, they were quite a ways back in fifth and sixth. Lately, Verstappen has had the upper hand over Danny Ricciardo. Ricciardo has had a lot of engine problems and technical problems with the car. So clearly fifth and sixth, but not pushing any of the Ferraris or the Mercedes at this stage. They've got a lot of work to do in the off-season, which is just around the corner, of course, just a couple of races to go. But Red Bull have a lot of work to do for the 2018 season. As a final point from this weekend's Formula One, Felipe Massa said goodbye to Brazil for the second time. That's right, he retired 12 months ago and inevitably came back in, was dragged back in. I think this time it's probably certain that Felipe Massa will hang up his gloves at the end of the season. So it's a big loss for Formula One. I love the interview that Kimi Raikkonen did before the weekend where he said they asked him about Felipe Massa and his retirement, and Kimi sort of went with the line, "I'll believe it when I see it." Hasn't he done this before? Kimi Raikkonen, he's a bit of a classic, that guy. He truly doesn't care about anything. He calls it as he see it. I like that about him. But he's also a bit of a sourpuss as well. Certainly one of those emotionless Finns. But Felipe Massa, legend of the sport, been around for so many years. Of course, was always second fiddle to Michael Schumacher at Ferrari. Has done okay with Williams, probably would have expected to do better, but probably a great way to end his career. So a big goodbye to Felipe Massa. Alrighty, let's talk some rugby union. The past weekend, there were some great games. I watched a couple, was following all of them throughout the Saturday afternoon, and it was a really, really good afternoon of rugby. Italy continued a decent run that they're on. I mean, obviously, when Italy faced the big teams in the rugby union world, they're always going to struggle. I mean, they're a bit behind the others. But they had a good win over Fiji at home on Saturday, finished 19-10. What a game, Scotland against Samoa. Not a game if you like defensive rugby, because it finished 44-38. But wow, I didn't see it, but it must have been a serious game to watch. Good win for the Scots. Samoa, never an easy. They're very physically dominant, Samoa. But it must have been a hell of a game, 44-38. England, ooh, this is an interesting one. England played Argentina on the weekend. They won 21-8. I think there were much bigger expectations of the England team, however. And to be quite honest, they were very, very wasteful. A lot of opportunities they had went astray. Just looking for that final pass, that final bit of clarity in the attacking part of the field. They just seemed to not be able to click when it was most important. Against Argentina, you can get away with it. But against bigger teams, I think they will have a problem if they're not going to be finishing off their hard work in the middle of the ground. Eddie Jones, the outspoken Australian England coach, he was not happy at all. He was shouting and swearing from the sideline because he expects a much better brand of rugby from the English. There's no doubt about it. Still, they got the win, and I think England are much better in the last couple of years under Eddie Jones, no doubt about that. But, of course, heading into the next World Cup, they're going to need to improve a little bit more, become a little bit more consistent, and have a better finishing product when it comes to point scoring. But still a good result, and I'd like to see them in the big game this coming weekend, which I'm going to talk about in just a few minutes, but the big game, England against Australia. Before we get to talking about that, Australia were in action last weekend against Wales, finished 29-21. Very, very exciting game. I got to watch large chunks of it. I think Australia were pretty much in control most of the time, but Wales really put in a solid effort. And it was a good game, very, very good game. Good away result for the Aussies. Good effort from the Welsh. A couple of big injuries for the Welsh, unfortunately. But, good game and a good result for Australia. Ireland, listen to this. Ireland 38, South Africa 3. I couldn't believe it. I didn't see the game, but I was following the score. And as it kept opening, as the margin kept opening wider and wider, I couldn't believe what I'm seeing. I mean, I'm quite sure that the bookies would have had South Africa as favourites before this game. I'm also quite sure that squad versus squad, South Africa have a better team, but they got an ass whooping, 38-3. It was a record-breaking score for the Irish. I'm pretty sure there was a lot of pissed Irish between Saturday afternoon and Monday morning. I mean, there must have been the biggest party ever in the history of Irish parties in Dublin on Saturday night. Great result for the Irish, 38-3. And the other big international game, no surprise, France 18, New Zealand 38, which leads me to this coming Saturday, I think, Saturday's game between England and Australia. It's going to be a big one. This is the rivalry of all rivalries. Let's be honest, from a sporting point of view, the two countries hate each other. No doubt about it. In historical times, Australia always had the upper hand. In the last few years, England have definitely come back. Of course, England still look at that 2003 World Cup final win where they were exceptional throughout the whole tournament. But this is always a cracking game, and I think that this weekend is going to be no different. Really tough one to call, to be honest. And I say that because Australia have been pretty poor the last couple of years, but are coming into a little bit of form now, which is great to see. On the other hand, England have been pretty solid the last few years, but in their last couple of games, perhaps haven't have been as effective as they would have liked to be. So this makes for a real, real interesting game this coming weekend. Of course, as I said, the English and the Aussies, from a sporting perspective, really hate each other, and there's no love lost between the two coaches either. Michael Checker for Australia and Eddie Jones, another Australian, for England. They've had a pretty decent war of words over the years, and I'm sure leading up to this weekend it's going to be no different. The English do have a couple of key injuries which may affect them, but they do have a much better squad and depth in this day and age, so I think that will be interesting to see how those injuries may affect the match this weekend. Australia, I believe, have one or two also, but maybe not in key positions, so they might be able to get through it a little bit better. But really difficult to call. Really pains me to say this, but at Twickenham, I think I'm going to go with an England win if I had to bet on it. I'd love to see the Aussies pull one over on the Poms, as we say, but I think it'll be a difficult game at Twickenham. However, if the Australia team that beat Wales and that beat New Zealand recently turn up for this game, if that Australian team turns up, I think the Aussies can win. But if that Australian team does not turn up, and if they're overawed by the situation or the atmosphere, I think they'll find it tough. Going to be a great game, though. Honestly, can't wait. And finally, in the first edition of the Oz Uncut Sports Podcast, I would like to address all our cricket fans. We were talking about, just a few moments ago, the rivalry between England and Australia, Australia and England. It gets no bigger than cricket's The Ashes. Yes, it happens every 2 years. It is Australia traveling to England, and then 2 years later, or thereabouts, England traveling to Australia. And that time has come. England are in Australia right now preparing for the Ashes, and it's going to be a cracker. I can't wait. I believe it starts next Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. I believe it's going to be very, very difficult for England, for the simple reason that Australian conditions are very, very different to that of English conditions. In Australia, Australia are pretty freaking good and very difficult to beat. They'll have their fast bowlers out. They'll be using the pace and the bounce of the wicket to intimidate the English. There's no doubt about that. Sad news for England is they may be missing, it's still uncertain yet, but they may be missing one of their key players, Ben Stokes, who is being investigated for grievous bodily harm after an incident at a nightclub some weeks ago. Now, just a bit of thoughts on that incident. From what I've read and from what I've heard, Ben Stokes is actually a bit of a hero because of the fact that he was protecting two gay friends who were being both physically and verbally abused by some louts somewhere in the UK. I believe it was Ben Stokes who stood up where others didn't, got into an altercation, and ultimately, because he's a bit of a big unit and he looks like a bit of a tough fella, ended up obviously hurting some other guy. That is a shame for him, because you would think it sounds like he was doing the right thing, but he's going to be punished for that by missing the biggest event in English and Australian cricket history, no doubt about it. The Ashes is the pinnacle, and it looks like, unless something changes quickly, Ben Stokes will at least miss the first couple of tests of this series. It's a bit of a shame, because I think it would have been more interesting with him in it than it is with him out of it. So I think it would have been much more interesting if he was playing in this. But it doesn't look like it's going to be the case. Getting down to the cricket itself, England are a great side, but again, I think I can't see England handling the bounce of the wickets in Australia with the Australian quick bowlers going at them full metal. I just can't see it. I would also think that the Aussies are much more used to the conditions down there, which is a big advantage in cricket. You can see that whenever teams travel to India or any of the eastern countries to play, with the conditions being so different in these countries, you know, obviously the home team is heavily favoured. But it's going to be great. I can't wait. I know most cricket fans, whether you support England, Australia, Pakistan, the West Indies, most cricket fans love the Ashes. It is probably the best cricket tournament there is. It's the most prestigious. And even though they're playing for this pathetic little wooden trophy, which actually represents the burnt bales of a set of stumps, sometime, I believe it was back in the 30s or something like that. That's what it represents. It's not actually the same urn anymore, but it's the... Anyway, you get the point. They play for this really pathetic little trophy, and it is the silliest thing in the world when you see them celebrating after victory in this tournament or this series, them lifting this pathetic little tiny pasisa of a trophy. But it's still a great... It's a great sport. One of my favorites. It's a great spectacle. It's the Ashes, and it gets underway in the next 10 days or so. Can't freaking wait. I think that just about wraps it up for this very first inaugural edition of the Oz Uncut Sports Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. If you have any topics you'd like me to discuss in the next one, I'm always open to suggestions. You can just send an email to info@ozuncut.com. Of course, this podcast is being featured on the website, so you can always go down to the discussion section below and give any comments you have regarding your thoughts on any of the topics raised in today's podcast, or of course, any suggestions that you may have for a podcast of the future. Thank you for listening. Take care, be safe, and love sport always.